support for Success Express, your business, career, and financial radio magazine. Hosted by Lisa and Nancy, editors of BigBlendMagazines.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Big Blend Radio Success Express Show. It's Ward Wednesday today. Every fourth Wednesday is Ward Wednesday. Ward Heinrichs, a San Diego employment attorney, comes on our show to give us an update on what's going on in employment laws, not just federally, but especially in California and even San Diego, where he's based, because sometimes these employment laws could just be only for San Diego, the city. It could be countywide, it could be statewide, or it could be federal. So today he's joining us May 25th, 2022, giving you the date because some of these laws are going to probably change some of these bills out there. So giving you the date on that so you can keep watching what's going on. But I do encourage you to go to Ward's website. It's bestemploymentattorneysandiego.com. The laws he's talking about today are about food and beverage. If you're in the food and beverage industry, if you own a restaurant, a winery, or you work in one, a bar, you're going to want to take a listen to this. So welcome back to the show, Ward. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. I've just been so busy lately. And as you know, I wanted to do a video production of this interview earlier this month. But I just got so busy I couldn't do it. So here we are doing a podcast.
I know, but it's okay. Listen, Nancy says hi. You know, she got stung by a scorpion, so you don't want to see that on video. Trust me. Her nickname is now Bigfoot.
Yeah, that's probably better.
She's Bigfoot, but she doesn't like that nickname, but it is funny.
Yeah, give her my best. I'm so sorry that happened. That's not fun.
She knows, like, something goes bump in the night. Sometimes it's a scorpion. So anyway, She's doing good, everybody. She's doing good. But she does say hi, and it's a good thing we're doing it this way. But yeah, you know, it's really interesting. Two things, well, all three things, main things we're talking about, have been going through changes. So a few months ago, you were talking about the Fast Recovery Act. And I do want to tell everybody that you have an article up on blendradioandtv.com. Just type in food and beverage, Ward, you'll find it. Fast Recovery Act, this was something we talked about a few months ago, and now things are starting to move. So can you give everybody a little overview about what the Fast Recovery Act. It's the Fast Food Accountability and Standards Recovery Act, what that's about.
Sure. It's about legislation that I'm assuming is going to be passed probably in September. Usually the governor signs things like this in September. And it actually creates something akin to a union for fast food workers. But it's statutory, meaning unions make agreements with businesses, but this is a law that says we're going to have an 11-member council with all the players represented on that council, and they're going to determine regulations for the fast food industry, including, you know, wages and other things like that.
Wow. So right now, so there's a hearing, right, that's happening June 1st to, like, hear.
Yes.
What happens? I mean, is this hearing going to be as good as the Amber Heard and Johnny Depp case? I've been wanting to ask you that forever. Because that does touch on employment defamation law, right? Isn't that like employment law in some
way?
Well,
it can. It can. Because there are, you know, often in employment cases, there are people yelling at each other and saying nasty things, and then behind their backs maybe saying something, and so it's potentially defamation. There are cases like that. Honestly, I've never actually filed a defamation claim. I've talked about them many a times, but I've never really filed one in an employment context anyway. But it does happen. And no, to answer your direct question, no, it won't be nearly as interesting as the Johnny Depp case. This is just a Senate committee, and they're going to listen to people rattle on, and they're going to figure out what they want to do with it. And like I said, I'm pretty sure the Senate will pass it too eventually, but they have to do their due diligence. And once that's done, then I'm pretty sure the governor's going to sign it.
Okay. So normally, so they're going to hear it on June 1st, but nothing will actually happen for a little while from there, right?
There's a hearing. Yeah, it just goes to a committee. So that's a Senate committee, and there's a couple other committees that will also be present listening to it and putting their two cents in. And before the Senate can pass it, it has to go before the whole Senate. So we're just in committee.
Okay.
So, you know, it's moving along at a snail's pace. I mean, that's what, you know, a lot of legislation does. But once it makes it out of committee, then at some point they'll put it on the calendar for the whole Senate to hear it and vote on it.
Okay, and I want everyone to
know. I've seen that many times in August, you know, right before, again, the governor often signs these in September. So I've seen a lot of these Senate bills, or assembly bills, because it's been passed by the assembly, and the assembly bill is now with the Senate. So now the Senate has to take a look at it. And I've seen them schedule full Senate hearings in August, you know, a month before it goes to the governor's desk.
It's interesting how it works, you know, how it, because, you know, on the flip side, like, you know, when you're not involved in it, well, I bet if even if you are involved in this, it looks like it just everything takes so long, you know, really, it just I think it. And then when you look at the whole, you know, when you're looking at workers and how it affects workers, that they may be thinking it takes long. Is it just that way normally? I mean, is it just me that goes, come on, just go listen and make your minds up? You know what I mean? And that probably doesn't work for justice to really happen, right? To move that fast.
Well, there's a, you know, fairly lengthy legislative process. And actually, this the bill originally was brought up last year, but they tabled it. So the assembly had this bill, and they don't always do anything with a bill. And in this case, they didn't. They tabled it, and then they brought it up again this year. So they said, oh, we got this bill that's been on the table for a while. Let's take a look at it again. And then they voted positively for it. But they didn't have to. I mean, they could say, yeah, needs to go back to committee. Ah, we're not going to vote for it. You know, they may vote for it, but vote it down. Or they'll table it again. So it can take a long time to get through. It just depends on the bill. I mean, many bills, though, like remember when AB 5 was going through, that was just done in a year, you know, so relatively quickly for legislation. But, you know, they say that legislation is like making sausage. So everyone's got their little input, and people object, people don't, la-di-da-di-da. Let's see if we can fix it. Because often when an assembly bill or a House of Representatives bill, and assemblies like the House of Representatives, they pass that, and then they send it over to the Senate, and the Senate says, "Ah, we don't like parts of this," so they rewrite it, and now they got to negotiate the differences. So that can happen.
And that can slow down. But you want that. I mean, you want the process to happen, but it just seems like...
Yeah, you do. Know, you do.
Yeah, you do want the process. That's what I'm saying. It just feels like, oh, come on, get on with it. But it doesn't work, and really, there's only so many people that can, you know, handle all the cases at one time, right? Number of judges and
cases. I mean, you know, getting out there, and then now you have to, in my case, the employers have to start following these laws. And that's, you know, once the governor signs it, that usually happens within a few months, usually the January 1st of the next year. So that happens, that part happens pretty quickly. But now they, you know, the whole industry has to get ready for this change. Depends how big of a change it is. I mean, not every law is a landmark case, but some really do change things. AB5 is one of them, and that changed things dramatically. So
It's like, oh, this will happen by January, and it's like September. Like, thank you, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, you know. So it's kind of it's an important thing. I mean, and the food and beverage industry has gone through so many changes over the last few years, and you know, and some of them are positive, and some are really difficult, and you know, so, you know, the Fast Recovery Act, I think, is something, you know, that helps the workers, you know, so it's hopefully things will work the way they need to. The law of justice will strike her hand, right? And it is a lady that's holding those little scales for your justice.
Yeah,
you know?
The scales of justice. Yes, it is
a lady.
Wait, and I'm embarrassed. I don't remember the lady's name. But
that's it. I'm sending you to court. Well, hey, listen, speaking about the process, how has it been? Because I know you've been slammed, right? And there's been a lot of changes in industry and in laws. But how is it now? I mean, because I remember when COVID hit, like things were on Zoom and delayed. What's it like now in regards to getting cases out there and being able to send them to trial even?
Well, things are still slowly going to trial. I've had this one case that was filed at the end of 2019 in December, and I'm defending that case. And so then COVID kicks in, 3 months later, and nothing's being set. And we still don't have, we just got a trial date on that. And so that'll be next year. So, for cases in San Diego to kick along. Now, some states and some jurisdictions, it's common to have cases kick around 4 or 5 years, but not in San Diego. They created what they call a rocket docket back in the 90s. So they were trying to get every case done within 12 months. That was the goal. Eventually they said, well, it's not realistic if it's a class action or something else. But since that time, San Diego has moved pretty quickly. And for a case that's filed at the end of 2019 and still and will be tried, first trial date, that doesn't mean it's going to go on that date, is in 2023, that's pretty long. That's long for San Diego. And so things are still, bottom line, things are still backed up. Wow. But they're starting to, the bottleneck's starting to get relief.
But then more cases are getting added to the wagon. You know what I mean? It's like, it's kind of hard.
Yeah. No doubt.
Things keep happening. But how do people, I'm sorry to go back to the Amber Heard, Johnny Depp trial, but I think we're all fascinated by this because it's like, why are we watching it? Why are we able to? I mean, I thought at one point that they kind of stopped cameras and all of that stuff. I don't know where this. It's like the O.J. Simpson trial, where we all were glued to that. This is another one, but they're going back in time. And how, when cases get delayed like this, how do you remember everything to be able to answer the questions mindfully? Like, everybody's at this point going, I don't remember. Or then you remember everything, and then people look at you like, oh yeah, you wrote this down, you're guilty. You know what I mean? It's like, if you know too much, if you remember every detail, it's weird after 5-6 years. I mean, how does that work in a case right now when things have been delayed and then you go to trial and you have to remember everything? Do you have to just have a lot of good documentation before you go in?
Well, that's one thing that attorneys usually rely on, is good documentation. And it depends on your case. Some cases, employment, we always have documents. I mean, I just can't even think of a case where we didn't have like lots of documents. But in criminal law, you might not have any documents. It's very common where all you have is a police report. There's not many documents in a case like that very often. And so it really comes down to testimony. And yes, the longer things... longer cases are not tried or don't get on a trial docket, the more likely evidence gets stale. And so that's one reason, you hear the maxim, slow justice is no justice. That's really what they're talking about. Because and that's why you have statute of limitations. Because if it gets too old, it's just, you're going to have a hard time getting the evidence together. It's not fair to the defendant anymore because you just let it sit around. So, yes, you really want to have things as fresh as possible. But there are ways, of reminding people. There are documents often. And if there's not, then, you have to talk to maybe several witnesses and sort of piece the thing together. So it depends. But you're right. Bottom line is, the quicker you get to court, the better the evidence is going to be.
And so as an attorney, when someone comes to you, like say it's sexual harassment, and I'll keep it in the food and beverage industry, right? Say it's a sexual harassment thing and like a bartender gets harassed by the manager, okay? And if things don't get documented immediately, isn't that part of HR having to document that stuff immediately? Because if the longer it waits, then there's an emotional component that builds up. Right. So like if it's a sexual harassment in the food and beverage, wouldn't you want everything to come out as fast as possible and get it in writing more than
Yes, there's a duty that's placed on the employer to do an investigation, and it's highly suggested that it should be in writing. And in fact, that may be in the statute too, that you have to do it in writing. But regardless, you need to investigate quickly, and it's a duty. And if you don't, you're taking a chance, because the jury instruction can show be put into before the jury and says, hey, if they didn't do their due diligence by following this law that requires them to investigate, then you can hold that against them. So there is a specific duty for employers to do that kind of thing. And it's a good thing, though. It's smart for the employer anyway. Even if there wasn't that law, you really should get on it and makes determine what happened and make any adjustments that are necessary. If you do that, it's possible you might escape liability. If you don't do it, now it's really hard to escape liability.
Yeah, you know, that's a thing. You know, when people don't handle situations and ignore them or just kind of leave it, right? Then emotionally things build up into a negative, like for the victim, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then all those duties kick in court, and the employer's just in a world of hurt. If they jump on it and it's not a manager, you said your fact pattern had a manager involved. And so the company's presumed to be on notice because the manager was involved. But if it's a coworker against a coworker, it's not. And so if you let that sit and you've got some notice, you know, all right, so I probably should do something, but I'm not going to do anything. Well, no, you're on notice and you haven't done anything and you haven't taken the right steps because you didn't investigate, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
I mean, you could have defensed it and now you can't.
Right, exactly. And sometimes it won't even have to go to trial, right, if you handle it sooner.
Oh, yeah. No, most cases don't go to trial. They usually settle.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. You settle. But that's if you handle it. So when, like, I know we've talked about this before, and I derailed us on the rest of our topics, but we're staying in the food and beverage industry. I'm keeping it there. And we're going to talk about minimum wage and salary. And we've also got to talk about the women on the board of directors. That's a whole new, I mean, we just talked about that. It's already shifted. Right. But keeping with sexual harassment, because the food and beverage industry is kind of wild. You know, if you're, you know, closing up at 1 a.m. in a bar, I mean, I've been there. I've worked it, and things happen, like, seriously, they do. And so I don't know if it's changed a little bit since, you know, the way back when I was in it, but things happen. And so when you think about when something happens, when should a lawyer, like, when should they call you, board, and say, okay, because I know franchises and bigger companies, they have HR and stuff, but when is the time? And what happens if you're not getting through the HR? Like, what if you have a problem with the HR? So there you go.
Yeah.
10 questions in one.
Right.
Sorry.
You need some help from the very beginning. You need to get your onboarding packages all put together. And that may not take a lawyer. And quite frankly, I know an HR consultant who I usually send that kind of stuff out with, because you were really talking about putting pamphlets together and getting the package together and making sure the employees get it and making sure they sign it. You know, I don't want to do that. If there's a problem, now I want to help you with the problem that happened.
Okay. Yeah. You're
that's
not the
kind
the
of stuff
prevention.
I really do.
Yeah. You're
yeah,
the
no,
surgeon.
Not so
you're
much.
Not- Yeah, you're
but
the
it does
surgeon.
Depend on the issue. It really does depend on the issue. I have client, you know, potential clients call me all the time, and I'll go, look, you know, I can help you out, and we can do things that will help prevent this from happening again in the future. That's usually what happens. And then I'll give them some forms that I've made in the past and say, hey, look, this will help you make sure that you have some written evidence about your meals and rest periods. And it's a good thing to have, because people often don't get them, especially in the restaurant industry. A lot of employees don't even want them, because they usually, very often, they'll work a shorter shift, maybe 4 to 6 hours,
right.
Very often not 8 hours. And they want to work the whole time. If they have to take a lunch or take a break, then they may lose a tip. I mean, so that's a big thing. And so they choose not to. But if somehow a rift happens between that employee and the employer, then they may say, hey, look, I didn't get these meal periods or rest periods, even though, you know, and quote unquote, I did it myself, but they're not going to say it that way now. So it's good to have some written proof to help you out with that. And so anyway, I usually start doing that kind of thing after there's a problem. But honestly, it's good to get at least an HR consultant in. And then if you have questions, it's good to have a lawyer answer some of those.
Because there
are forms that I have that I haven't given to HR consultant. I know they don't use, and that I know are really pretty darn good. And I know the law. You know, I know the law when problems are the issue. You know, because that's what I deal with all the time.
Right. I mean, I know on shows you'll go, well, no, well, yes, well, no, and if it's emotional, no, it's not going to happen. You know, law is law, and facts are facts, right? And there's the emotional side, and I think that's what's so hard, especially in abuse cases or discrimination cases. It's an emotional thing. And does that ever go to trial with, like, hey, this is emotionally affecting?
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah, they go to trial. Now, again, you know, the rule of thumb is the ratios may have changed, but it was – you know, like 96% or 97% of the cases settle or settle some way. Maybe some are so bad that they just get dismissed. They don't go to trial is the point. So you maybe try 3 or 4% of these cases. So that's really the main way of handling these things. And often it's through mediation is, you know, let's get the mediation if it's a serious case and see if we can settle it. So normally you do, but they don't all. So there's, you know, 2, 3, 4% that these crazy juicy cases that do go to trial, no doubt.
And we've talked about this before. See, I'm being Nancy and, you know, taking us down the garden path, you know, how she does that. But yes. Like, how do you know when you should go to trial or like, because I know a lot of times you've said like, really, you need to look and see if you really want to do this, because it's not just money, it's time, it's even reputation to go to trial. Yeah. For both sides, whether it's the employee or the employer, do you really want to do that? And everybody can kind of, if it could be solved without going to trial, it's a good thing. Unless it's some really off the wall, crazy, like you, Johnny Depp and Amber Heard. Did they really have to do this? You know, I mean, really?
Well, that's probably because Johnny Depp I'm going to guess that he wanted to get this out in the public like this.
Yeah. Nancy and I both think it's a huge PR stunt. And then one day they'll be back together and Will Smith and Chris Rock will be, you know, holding hands again real soon. The same thing. You know, it's kind of like PR stunts are like, you know, when you're up at that kind of level, PR stunts are PR stunts that how big can we go? You know what I mean? But maybe it's real. You know, obviously.
Well, here's where cases I think get tried usually. And that would be where each side has a different assessment of the value of the case. And so if they're really far apart, that's probably a case that's going to end up getting tried. Now, one thing that will prevent that, even if you have a real far apart assessment, may be the cost, because, you know, litigation costs money. And so one party, now often plaintiffs may have a contingency fee, but not always. And if they do, you're talking about time and effort. And now, you know, the attorney can get nervous about that and say, hey, look, you know, we're going to go to trial and, you know, I assess it here, but you're assessing it here. And, you know, what are we going to do about this? So I really think, though, bottom line, the cases that probably go to trial more often than not are the ones that are each party has a different assessment of the case and they really can't budge from their position.
That's interesting, man.
And then you go to trial, but you better be prepared for the expense and the time that's involved.
It's
a lot of work.
Yeah. And so try and not go that crazy. You know what I mean? And especially,
well, that's why most cases settle.
Yeah. Especially now with what's happening with, you know, the pandemic and a backlog, you know, that you may think, can we just get it over with, you know, and get on with our lives? You know, if it's been dangling there for a few years, like you're saying, this one trial at the beginning of the pandemic is only going next year. That's rough, man. That's rough. And that means it's obviously has to do that, but it's rough, you know, when you have to wait that long, I think, you know, just for people in general to have that kind of hang there.
Oh yeah. You know, no, both sides don't really like it. Yeah. You know, defendants of course are paying out of pocket. So they hate that. So that's probably the biggest concern of the defendant. And then the plaintiff, this thing is, you know, sticking around, and they feel wronged and they want to get it done. And, you know, they're just being exposed in depositions and not having a great time. You know, so people don't like those delays generally.
No, it's wild, huh?
Litigants don't.
Yeah. Okay. So, I'm going to bring us back on track, but we're still in the food and beverage industry. So we're doing good.
Yep.
Minimum wage and salary. Well, this has been a conversation for years now, Ward, and you're bringing it back because it is still, California is still changing, right? So tell us a little bit about what everyone should know now and what's to come, because in January it'll change again, right?
Yes, it will. The main reason why I brought this up again was I think it's always good to refresh your memory as to what the minimum wages are. But the other reason, and the more important one, I think this time, is the minimum salary, because the minimum wage is the basis for what the minimum salary for exempt employees is going to be. It's, you know, two times the minimum wage. And so, they assuming they're full time, it's two times, you know, a 40-hour week. So the minimum salary now is, for if you have 25 or fewer employees, is $58,240. And the minimum salary for employers who have 26 or more is $62,400. And that has just gone up, to me, in leaps and bounds over the years. Every year, the minimum wage has gone up a dollar for the last, you know, 5 years or so. And that multiplies out because the minimum wage, again, is the basis for the minimum salary.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
That means that salary is just getting bigger. You know, not too long ago, it was like mid-40,000. And now we're really at 60,000. And next year, the minimum wage is going to go from $14 an hour if you have 25 or fewer employees to $15 an hour. And it won't change for 20 employers who have 26 or more employees. It'll stay at 15. But then there's going to be more increases in different cities and municipalities will have higher minimum wages. But those minimum wages don't affect the salary. The salary is only affected by the state minimum wage. So,
okay. So, all right,
to me,
so
you know, $60,000 and the salary for exempt people, you know, that's a chunk of change.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, so you're looking that California, like salary is the state, but like a city, you know, it could be Eureka, California, that just came to mind, just because we interviewed a band there. Eureka, California could say, Eureka, we're going to do, you know, $17 minimum wage. And so that city itself would have to do that for minimum wage, but the salary would stay with what the state has said, right?
Yes, exactly.
Wow. Well, Eureka to
it.
That. All right.
Yeah.
Wow. Hey, it's beautiful. We just went through there and all the redwoods and everything. It's beautiful, man. It's cool. Northern California is beautiful.
Yeah, I've never been to Eureka. I've been to Northern California and seen, you know, all the redwoods and, you know, the Sierras, which have the sequoias, which are magnificent too. So, yeah, I've seen all those, but I haven't been to Eureka. I'd love to go.
Oh, it's beautiful. If you do 101 and Highway 1 all the way up, through the redwoods, we did that, and then up into Crescent City and everything, there's some state parks that have redwood forests. You drive down these dirt roads. There's one in Auric, and you drive down these dirt roads and you go through like it. You feel like you're in Jurassic Park, pretty much. Redwoods and ferns, dirt road, and all of a sudden you're at the beach, and the redwoods are right on the beach, and There's elk eating berries. I mean, it's crazy cool. It's cool.
That's cool.
It's magic out there. You know, it's really cool. So, but now Nancy and I are getting ready to leave the Pacific Northwest in a few days, and we will be back in the, we're going towards Texas. So we're hoping to dodge wildfire. It's kind of crazy how we're going to, I don't know how we're going to get there actually, but we're going and we'll get there on time. That's all I know. So, but we'll, and then eventually be back in the Smokies. And so that's a whole other awesome thing.
Wow.
But yeah. Yeah.
You're going across country.
Woo. Yeah. Yeah. It's bad. You know, we did it four times last year and we're kind of racking that up again. But anyway, let's go to the women not required to be on the board of directors. So last month that we talked about this board of director thing. And so this has already been moving. I mean, within a month, not even 3 weeks, this has been changing up. So let's just go back to what was this whole bill, these laws about board of directors, because it looks like your Equal Protection Act came in that you were talking about, saying this isn't going to make it because of the Equal Protection Clause, excuse me, not Act. You said on the show last time that this is going to knock it down, and it looks like it's happening, right?
Yeah, both those bills, there's SB 826 and AB 979, and both those bills, I always thought after they were passed that they had big equal protection problems. And most people did. Even the Governor Brown signed the first one, SB 826, Senate Bill 826. And he said he's going to sign it, even though he believes that that it will be challenged vigorously in court. So everyone knew that there was a problem, and the courts have just borne that out. And last time we talked about this again, like you said before, it's only been a couple of months. But the Senate, the Assembly Bill, AB 979, was the one that had just been overturned by the trial court. A motion for summary judgment was granted for violating the Equal Protection Clause. And the 979 was about getting people who are in communities that are underrepresented onto boards. And, you know, there are certain, there was a matrix of numbers that had to, that the corporations had to apply, comply with. If it was fewer than five, then they didn't have to have any, and you know, people that are in underrepresented communities. But you know, the larger the board, the more people from underrepresented communities had to be on the boards. But obviously, that discriminates against people who aren't from underrepresented communities, but are from a recognized community.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why that one got struck. And we had talked about that.
Yeah.
But now, since then, the SB 826, which was the first one passed, said that you have to have a certain number of women on the board, again, depending on the size of the board. And the judge, another Los Angeles judge, struck that down on Equal Protection Clause too, because it says, hey, it's really not, you know, fair to men. You know, you can't legislate this, you know, and most of the articles talk about, well, NASDAQ's requiring this kind of thing now, and that's okay because they're not a governmental organization. And so what you're seeing is many companies are just stepping up and taking care of these issues anyway, even though pretty clearly these violate equal protection.
Wow. I'm going to start a new sound file for you. Ward's predictions came true.
I've been pretty accurate. I have to
you
say,
have been
I surprised
really,
myself.
No, really. I mean, I'm just going to say the last couple of years, like you're going like, I don't think this is going to happen. And boom, I'm like, dude, he knows, you know, and it's true. But the Equal Protection Act is ultimately what will protect everybody, no matter what color, you know, sexual,
right.
You know, whatever.
Yes.
And I'm going to get in trouble for saying whatever's. But I don't know what to say anymore. I'm sorry. I'm trying.
Well, yeah. So bottom line is one group can't be promoted over another. And so, you know, for years, you saw equal protection and discrimination laws being applied to people who are generally in power. And, you know, we like to say white males. All right. So white males. And so these laws were protecting non-white males. But when now our society has evolved to the point where we're going, well, maybe we need to, you know, enact some of these things through the through the government and promote groups who have not had some of the same success or the same opportunity. But that, you know, again, what is good for the goose is good for the gander. You can't discriminate against white males either. So even, you know, all the discrimination laws, you know, we talk about Fair Employment and Housing Act and discrimination and harassment.
Oh.
Well, if a woman picks on me and I work for her, I can sue. No, it will picks on me because I'm a white man or a
see,
man.
We're back to Johnny Depp.
Well, it's
Depp
fair.
Ever heard. See?
It's Johnny. Fair. You know, I don't want to sue anyone, but, you know, it's just fair. You know, you got to be fair for everyone. So that's what equal protection is really saying. Yeah, you got to be fair.
Right. So right now they're saying, you know, so women were supposed to be on the board of directors. These are for public companies, just to be really clear.
Yes,
so like
true.
if it's McDonald's or, you know, a franchise, et cetera, you're going to, you know, women do not have to be on the board. Now, what about different race, sexual preference? Because at that one point, I thought that was also part of it, right? Or is it just always women?
Yeah, it was. And that was the one that was first struck down. That was the Assembly Bill 979 was about promoting underrepresented communities, which were defined as just to generalize, minority communities and communities that are of different sexual preference than heterosexual. So that law was saying these people need to be on the boards, and then the court said, "Well, equal protection says you can't force companies through law to do that."
Oh, okay. So are we all done, or is there more going on? I mean, are we done with this thingy, or appeals can happen, right?
Yeah, appeals can happen. And the last thing I read on it was that there no final judgment had been issued in either of those cases, and so you have to wait for a final judgment. And once a final judgment's done, then the state would have 60 days to file an appeal. I don't know if they'll try. I mean, this is one where I would go, boy, if I'm the governor, I'm probably going to save the money of the litigation because we're going to lose this. Now, you know, politics being what it is, maybe the governor wants to make a point and say, hey, look, I still love this stuff. I support you guys and underrepresented communities and women, and I'm going to show you that I mean it by filing this appeal, even though I'm really sure they're going to lose it. So
we're going back to the publicity stunt, right? So isn't this a good way of just waking people up to, we need more diversity, you know, don't be gender biased, racist and all of that stuff. Look at who you have that's got talent in your company, because you'll make more money if you have the right people on your board, period.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Right? You'll be more effective.
There's a lot of reasons to do these kinds of things anyway. And when you said publicity stunt, I think what you're really saying is, well, California probably knew, you know, the legislatures and the governor even warned about it, that these aren't going to survive, but we still want to underscore the issue. All right, fair enough. That's what they did.
Okay. I have a question, totally left field, again, going off the garden path.
Okay.
How come cases get tried in certain places? Like the Johnny Depp Amber Heard thing, because it is weird. Why are they in Virginia? They are in Virginia, Alexandria. How is it where someone sues someone that they end up? We need to, you know what, your next segment, we need to do a Q&A on how the legal system works. I think,
because okay.
I know a lot of people are sitting there going, what the heck, how does this happen, you know? But how does that happen? Like if a company is in California, but they have multiple offices and stuff, how do you know where something goes to court? Like if the head office is in St. Joseph, Missouri, but they have an office in California and it's a California law, would they have to be tried in California, or in Missouri? Missouri.
Well, all right, so there's some complicated laws that are involved now. I mean, the two concepts really are jurisdiction. So what group of courts can hear this case because of, usually because of where things happen, but it doesn't always have to be where things happen. And that means they have the power to hear it. And then the other concept is venue, meaning many courts in this jurisdiction have the power to hear the case, but they're not situated in the best spot to hear it. So venue takes care of that. So if you have let's say, a car accident and people are injured in downtown San Diego, the courts in LA and San Francisco, they have the power to hear that case. But it doesn't make sense. And so they have the jurisdiction. They have the jurisdiction capability. But the venue rules say, well, let's just have the courts in San Diego hear it because that's where it happened. So it doesn't have anything to do, again, jurisdiction's power. When you have an accident in the state of California, Arizona doesn't have the power to hear that because the laws that were violated are in California. So even though you have courts that do hear the same type of case in Arizona, you know, auto accidents,
right,
can't be the one that happens in California can't happen there because it's not an Arizona law that was violated. It's a California law that was violated.
Wow. Okay. We've got to do this, Ward, because I think I'm going to go to our Facebook groups and everything and get everyone to submit their questions. I think we've got to do it because because it's, you know, when you think about, I wonder about how many people, small businesses and employees, always wonder about their rights. What right do I have? What am I doing wrong? You know, what am I doing right? You know, because it is so, it, like, the law is changing all the time with these, you know, and you know, obviously,
oh, yeah,
doing a great job keeping everybody informed, which is awesome, but it's so hard. Even like on the news, how do you keep up with your own, you know, news thing when you're working?
Oh, it's tough. I mean, I honestly do feel sorry for employers in California. The laws are changing all the time. Some are really technical. And I if you're trying to make your business succeed, sometimes, and especially a smaller business, you know, big corporations, they've got enough deep pockets probably,
right,
to take care of this kind of thing. But if you're a smaller business, you know, you don't have enough time, attention, or money probably to really pay attention to all the things that you're supposed to be doing. It's hard.
And you can hire the wrong person who is paying attention and uses it. You know what I mean? It's like,
oh, absolutely.
So
oh, yeah.
There's that too, you know, and on both sides. There's both sides of that.
Oh, both sides. I don't mean to. Yeah. Yeah. Both sides.
No, it's both sides. Both sides. But it's the same thing. Like, some of these laws are so hard. Like, you know, we do a lot of, you know, what's going on in wildlife and, you know, nature and parks and stuff. And you think something's really cool, and then you read it and you're like, oh, that actually is like don't believe the headlines. You know what I mean? And I think that's really hard for businesses to keep, and employees, you know, you think about everyone's so busy just trying to, especially now, inflation and everything that's going on post COVID, there's so much fluctuation and change that everyone is dealing with. You kind of start running on headlines, but you could be so wrong by doing that. You could be really, really wrong. And I think this board of directors one
absolutely
is one of those things where you think, oh, that's really cool, give it a thumbs up, and then you find out, oh, it's really not. I think that's one of those bills that you think you automatically would give a thumbs up to for diversity on a board, whether it's male, female, you know, all of that stuff, race, you think automatically. But if you're not using the equal protection clause, that's not cool for anybody down the road. So
right,
that's
no,
what I'm
absolutely
saying. These headlines, you could hear something while you're making dinner, about to go to bed, and you hear that, and you could get the wrong picture as an employer and employee, and that's not a good thing. And the board is a little different, and those people do have all those little extra pockets of defense.
Yeah, and I think
money,
you pointed out. I think you pointed out a good issue, and that is, yes, employers do, especially small employers, do fall prey to the complex web of employment regulations in California. But employees do too, because they hear things that maybe could apply to them, and they're mad because something bad's happened at work, and they may call Ward, and Ward goes, well, tell me why you're mad. Tell me what happened. And I go, it doesn't sound like you have a case. And they can't understand it because it's something that, you know, doesn't feel good. And maybe there was a bad actor, but not all laws, not all situations are covered by a law. You know, we don't have a bullying act. I think, you know, we've talked about this before. I think New Jersey does. And I haven't heard that we're getting closer to one in California. I think it will happen, but I don't know when it will happen. I think it will happen. But that's one of those predictions that's open-ended because I don't know when it'll happen.
I'm writing it down, Ward, because one day I'm going to go, Ward, you were right. It's coming.
Ward was right.
It's happened.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I will be right. I think that we'll get to it. But, you know, some people think, you know, workers, employees, think that you can't bully. And I go, well, no, you can. You just can't do it in the wrong way.
Yeah. You see, I think, you know, having been the employee in the food and beverage industry on so many different types of industries in that. You are in this, it can get gossipy and it can get pissy and gang related, you know? So if one person did something slightly wrong, by the time the next shift comes around, you are the worst person on the planet. You know what I mean? It because it can get gangy because you work on teamwork. So the teamwork can actually flip on you. You know what I mean? If you've done something wrong, not addressed it, not what, you know what I mean? So it can flip on you and people are working so hard. And that industry is rough. It's rough on your body. It's rough on your emotions. You have to have a thick skin like you wouldn't believe. And people get worn down and, you know, chefs and musicians hang out at the end of the night, you know, it's, and you could go in the back and you could have a chef who's pissed, has been in heat, like you wouldn't believe all night and had a, you know, a new waiter or, oh, sorry, server. I don't know what to say anymore, but come in and not do things on time. And it is combustible. Because everything has to move the way it has to move. And it is combustible, yet teamwork is key. But when it goes wrong, holy hell can go down depending on who is in the team. And some people prey on it and they need to go to HR. Let's put it that way. And some, you know, because some people will make a mountain out of a molehill in those situations, which can derail a business so fast.
It can be very difficult.
I always say you look at reviews online, you look at those reviews on a restaurant, on a hotel, and I always say a restaurant can have a really bad night. Yeah, you know, a pilot cannot do that with a, you know, cargo load of people, but a restaurant can have a bad night for sure. And maybe your steak didn't come out the way it was, but maybe even though the chef cooked it, it's not his fault. You don't know. And that's why the teamwork and I think the HR and all the prep is so important, because those little things can escalate into some craziness, because you're talking about people that are people forward and not people forward. The people in the back of the kitchen don't necessarily want to hang out with the people in you know, they're serving. It's a very weird thing. It's an odd industry that way. And some chefs are really cool about hanging out with people in the front, but I interview them all. It's a very interesting industry and hard. And I just hope in closing of this conversation that we all give the food and beverage industry a little bit of a break, because they're going through hell and they've been going through hell for the last 2 to 3 years. And just tip your waiters and waitresses.
Well, yeah, I think
all of them.
I think,
you know what I mean?
In general, things are a lot better in the food and beverage industry now. You know, in California, well, it depends where you are. LA, I think they required masks again not too long ago, and I think they're still doing that.
Oh, wow.
But and so I don't know how that may have affected their regulations for restaurants in LA. But down here in San Diego, we haven't been required to wear masks for months, a long time. And so things are really pretty back to normal, and
that's
it's good
awesome
to see.
To hear. That is awesome. I mean, live music.
Oh, you know, the one thing where it's not back to normal, though, is they're having a hard time finding enough employees.
That's what I'm saying. The industry is a whole.
That's a lag over from COVID.
Yeah, the industry as a whole. I mean, it's multiple industries, actually, just supply chain issues, farming. There's a lot of issues. But that's why I say we all kind of, I feel, as society, have to kind of not be so expect everything to be perfect, because it's not, and maybe just have a little bit more patience with each other. Yeah, it's hard right now.
No, one of my favorite restaurants is called the Mandarin Walk, and they used to have it's just right up here on Balboa and Claremont Mesa Drive. I love going there. Their food's always been good. But when COVID happened, they shut down the restaurant side, and they only did takeout. And they did fine with takeout. But you know what? They're still only doing takeout. They can't find the employees. And maybe it works out for them, except for rent. But yeah, this is not uncommon in that industry, where this place has been in business for 20 years, maybe 30 years. And they're really having a challenge now. I think they're making it go. I think they're making it work, but you know, they can't serve in their dining room. They haven't been able to make it happen.
Mm. Also, what's hard is if they still have the building, they're either paying rent or
they're paying rent on it. Sure they are.
You know what I mean?
Unless they got some type of break. I'm sure, you know, you go back to your landlord and say, "Hey, we got this problem.
Right.
Maybe you can work something out," but maybe you can't.
Some have flipped it and done really well, and some have not. It's just every industry is different. You know, we have friends who have a restaurant out in Lake Worth, Florida. And by the way, and Ward's article, by the way, will be in the next issue of Eat, Drink, Be Merry magazine. And and Mama Gizzy, that she's in there. And she, you know, had the storefront for many years. COVID comes, you can't do that. And she has to, just for her own health, be away from people with COVID. And she's making it by, and they still have this building, but they're doing everything, you know, online, ordering, catering, you know, that kind of thing, so that she can be safe. And it's just the way the world has worked. And then some have, like her, are doing really well that way and going, huh. Maybe that's where it's at now. So I wonder,
maybe I don't need all this, these employees.
Because once you make that leap back, you kind of have to stick there, because if you can't go back, you know what I mean? It's really difficult to go backwards again. So it's kind of like, let's see it out. And now they're talking about, we have monkey thingies. I don't know, whatever this monkey virus-y pox.
Oh, monkey pox.
Jeez. Yeah. You know, so people are a little freaked out, but, you know, do what you can. It feels great to be out and go to a restaurant and, you know, have a margarita and some enchiladas.
No,
are you serious?
Absolutely.
Dude, it's awesome. And to hear music live, it's the best thing on the planet.
Yep.
So no, I
really
hope we can all move forward and have some patience. That's my thing, is the employee situation is real, and just have patience as best you can. Just patience is it. And when you do have a good margarita and really good tacos, tell me about it, because I want one right now. Sounds good to me. Ward, always a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you for joining us again. Everyone, Ward is on the show every fourth Wednesday. Keep up with Ward and on his website and his blog, bestemploymentattorneysandiego.com. His articles are also up on blendradio and tv.com. But thank you so much, Ward. I'm going to get those questions. We need to do this.
Okay.
I think it'd be super fun to go, you know, we're just going to use the Amber Heard and Johnny Depp case, you know, It's going to be a whole new thing.
Sure, we could use that as a basis. Might need to give me a little heads up on that, though, because I know they're way up east, and I don't know all the jurisdictional laws out there. But, I'd try to look it up.
I think what I'm saying is, like, people are going, I didn't know this was a law. I didn't know you could say this. When can you say, when you watch the court case and this is overruled, this is speculation, when is it speculation? We're sitting there all going, I want to hear what they have to say. You know what I mean? So there's all of that legalese.
Yeah.
We need to have a legalese show.
Well, so that's the law of evidence. So, wow. Yeah. I mean, I could probably do a whole show on each phase of it, you know, jurisdiction, evidence, discovery.
Fun. And then I'm going to behave. I'm going to say, everyone, again, bestemploymentattorneysandiego.com. Thanks, Ward.
You're welcome. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.